you and I praise your name. I thank you for your grace. I thank you for your mercy. I thank you, God, that you're alive and well on the throne, Father. And I thank you, God, that you're working in our midst, Lord. You're working with power and with authority. God, we are your hands extended. We're your feet extended. We're your mouth extended. And God, help us not be afraid when we see these signs to step up to the plate, because we may save a life. In the name of Jesus, we pray. And the church said, I've told this story many, many times, but there was some preachers that had gone to a retreat or some kind of camp meeting. My friend, it was a camp meeting. It was in a big city. And they were eating supper before the service. And so they stopped to eat supper. And when they stopped to eat supper, the Spirit spoke to this one man and said, tell the waitress that I love her. And he said, come on now. I'm in a hurry and all this. And is that really you talking, Lord? And she came back through and he said, tell her that I love her more than she'll ever imagine. He didn't do it. She came by and the Spirit checked him 3 or 4 times. And he never told her what the Spirit was telling, that I love her and love her more than she ever could imagine. Well, they went to camp meeting. When they come out of camp meeting, they were walking down this same avenue and they noticed a rescue squad was outside of the restaurant. And so they walked up to see what was going on. And they asked what was going on. They said, crazy, said this waitress, after her shift, committed suicide right there in the back room. And she left a note, and it was the same, and the note was, nobody loves me. And it was that same waitress that God had spoken to this young man to say, God loves you more than you ever could imagine. He could have saved that girl's life that night by speaking the words that the Spirit spoke. Well, you can't necessarily say the Spirit's giving you this, but you can say that it's Spirit-led, and I want you to take this, and I put it on one sheet of paper, so you ain't got to go through a bunch of sheets of paper. It's not little bitty like mine. Mine's so little. You got to have a magnifying glass to see it. And when you see somebody in suicide trouble, I want you going, can you hold this paper and back up a little bit? Yes. I need to ask you these questions. You know, Dr. Baltimore saw me one time walking in the hospital in the stairwell. And as I'm walking in the stairwell, I'm doing like this. And Dr. Baltimore says, either you're going to have to extend your arms or you're going to have to come to me and let me fix your eyes, one or the other. Thank you, Dr. Baltimore. You're so helpful. All right. Suicide prevention when life seems hopeless. Facts and fables. I'm just going to go over just a few things from last week, just so those that weren't here will be able to get into it. And it's not on your paper. A lot of this is not going to be on your paper, so don't look for it. If you don't, I'll tell you if it's on your paper. Matter of fact, I better get a paper so I can tell you if it's on your paper. So you won't be looking for it saying, well, where in the world is that at? So some of this first stuff is not just a little bit on your paper. The rest of it's on this PowerPoint. All right. I hear this all the time. Matter of fact, I heard this after we did our first class on suicide. I heard this, and I think it was Office Depot. Out of the side of my ear, somebody talking to somebody else. Here's what they said. I just want to die. After we talked about it in Office Depot, and I heard it, so I turned around and I tried to get with him, and I found out the kid was telling her mama, if I can't have the book I want, I just want to die. She said, you got to die. I ain't paying $8 for a notebook. So I felt better about it, and I kept on going. All right. This aching admission has been spoken too many times with tragic results. I'm going to go through it quick. These 5 words, I just want to die, reveal a soul mired in the depths of despair. All hope is gone, and all too soon, life itself is gone likewise. No group is exempt from walking down this dark path of escape. Male, female, young, old, rich, poor, it doesn't matter. I've seen it amongst all people, as a chaplain and as a pastor. I have actually not seen suicide actually discriminate in age, in race, in ethnic background and work background, it doesn't matter. I've seen it in all different ways. Yet most people contemplating suicide don't really want to die. They just want the pain to stop. Once you remember that, here's some bullets for you. You can use this. When somebody says, I just want to die, you can say, do you really want to die? Or is it you just want the pain to stop? Ask them that, all right? Because their burden is so heavy. So now, if you're struggling, if you're desperate, if you're contemplating taking your life, realize this, the Lord longs to heal your heart and restore your hope. In absolute honesty, go to God about your pain and say to Him, I'm in pain, I'm in distress, may your salvation, O God, protect me. We went into that heavy last week. We're not going to go into it heavy this week. I just put it up just to have some continuity. Again, does life seem impossible? Over 1 million people yearly die of suicide. Over 1 million. Now, out of the 1 million that die of suicide, I can't even begin to tell you how many actually thought they would be saved before they died. If somebody's calling you and telling you, believe me, there's a good chance they want you to save them before they die. But somebody goes out in the backyard, takes a gun, don't warn anybody, all right, he's not wanting you to rescue him. But they call you and say, I took some pills, or I've done this and that, or I'm getting ready to, know that it's a cry for help. Go help them. Let nothing stand in the way. Get them some help some way or another. Matter of fact, I was talking to a guy. I was counseling with a Vietnam veteran. And as I was counseling with a Vietnam veteran, he said, if I could just end it all, I'd be at peace. And I said, that's the third time you've told me that. I'm going to your house. I'm getting you. We're going to get help. And he said, see, I can't tell you anything. And I said, no, I'm glad you told me that. He said, no, I'm not going to tell you anything else. I said, why? He said, I'm telling you how I feel, and now you're going to want to come get all them businesses. And so I told him, I said, well, here's how it's going to be. I'm going to give you a mulligan. Next time you say that, I'm going to your house. I'm picking you up. We're going somewhere. He said, okay. If I say it again, I know you're coming. So next time he called me, he said, I'm going to be very careful what I'm telling you right now. I said, you need to be, because I'm going to get you help one way or the other. All right, we're going to get some help. But, of course, I don't think he was serious, because if he had been, I'd have been at his house and the whole shooting match, right? There's more people to die of suicide than all the casualties of homicide and war combined. Think about this statistically. Seriously, on average, one person dies from suicide every 40 seconds somewhere in the world. Well, 20 others are attempting the same act. That's an extraordinary number of people desperately choosing death. All right. Have your desires been dashed by the pain of depression and despairs? Have your hopes been smashed by hurt and heartache? Have you searched without success for a lasting solution? Honestly, if you're struggling, are you struggling with thoughts of suicide? Have you begun to believe that life, that self-inflicted death, would be better than God-given life? And here it is. Realize the Lord looks with tender, genuine compassion, and He cares about your every need. You can learn how to experience the meaningful life He's planned for you. He has a perfect plan for you to free you from the shackles of suicidal thinking based on truth, not lies. And again, here it is. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So here we go. Get ready. Suicide. Just to hear the word tears people's nerves up. I think sometimes it would be easier for a loved one to die a death of cancer than to die a death of suicide. Yeah, I mean, that's the way it is. The initial response is often, oh no, why would anybody want to resort to such an irreversible act? And so when we feel a sense of tragic loss, we discover that suicide has snuffed out one or more for life forever. Someone fights that persistent desire to end it all. And there's certain people that they're always talking about ending it all. And that's called suicidal ideation. When somebody has suicidal ideation, they're always thinking, it would just be better if I just ended it. I've known people all my life that they weren't really talking about suicide, but you'd hear them talk, it'd just be better if I was never born. It'd be better if I wasn't here. That was their go-to response. Whenever they got depressed, it was always their go-to response. They weren't even contemplating suicide, but that's just that. Just let me end it all. Since God is our creator, we need to know God's heart on life and death, and that means our own life and death. Throughout the Bible, life and death are presented in different contexts, but God never tells us to pursue death. He says, I'll set before you life and death. Now choose life so that you and your children may live. All right. Here it is. Well, some facts and fables about suicide. The first five are this week, the second five are next week. If you didn't hear one tonight, wait, write it down and wait till next week because you might hear it next week. If you don't, we'll go over it. I don't want, if you got a question about anything, we don't want to dismiss it, all right? If I can't give you the answer tonight, I'll look it up and give you the answer. What you believe about suicide is critical. Your thoughts about suicide will shape your response. You need wisdom to discern what is false and what is true about self-imposed death. The wisdom of God's word will help you know how to have the right response. Here we go. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death. Number one fable. How many's ever heard this? Never talk about suicide with deeply depressed people who give them ideas. How many's ever heard that? Guess what? I was going to say is, and I used to feel the same way about this too, until I started training. And after I got training, I found out it's okay to talk about suicide with deeply depressed people because, like you said, Stephen, it's already on their mind. It's already there somewhere in the crevice of their head. Either they're saying, you ask them about suicide, they're going to go, oh, no, I'm not that depressed. Or they'll say, I've been thinking about that. So the fable is never talk about suicide with deeply depressed people. If you got somebody in your family, you got a family member, you got a friend, you got a coworker, a spouse, a child that is very, very depressed, it is okay to go to them and say, have you been thinking about suicide? It's all right. Go ahead. That's a control thing, yes, because I've seen children along the way, and I've seen boyfriends and girlfriends. The boyfriend says, well, if you don't come back, I'm going to kill myself. That's a control, okay? You know, I even had somebody say, well, if you don't do this, I'm going to kill myself. and there's been times where I say, you want some help? But you know when I asked them that, because I knew they weren't serious, I knew they were trying to control me. And I said, well, if you want some help, I can tell you how you can go to the car and you can run from your tailpipe, you can run in your car and you can sleep yourself away. We can go I got a shotgun with a short barrel, we can do that. You know, you name it off and I go, No, I'm just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. You know, but you better know that. Don't do it when somebody's really trying to commit. So it's control. You can tell when somebody's trying to control you. That's one of their go-tos. I mean, it's like, especially boyfriends and girlfriends. They will do that, I mean, in a heartbeat. If you don't come back, I'm going to hurt myself. That's right. That's a good answer. That's a wonderful answer. It's not the first thing they used. That's usually one of their, when they went to pull out the big guns, they'll pull that one out. That reminds me of a MASH episode. How many remember MASH when Colonel Potter took the guy in and gave him the gas and put it to his head and said, here, go ahead, I'm going to help you. I mean, the guy said, you're crazy. He said, no, you wanted to die, didn't you? Here, let me help you. So you got to be led by the Spirit. You got to do not discount God in all of this. God's Spirit can let you see it, let you know if somebody, because he can even let you know if somebody's contemplating and hadn't even said a word. I've seen people I knew that were contemplating, they hadn't said a word. Then there's others that they just kept talking about it, but they weren't serious about it. So the fact is, asking what someone is feeling doesn't create suicidal thoughts. You can assume that most depressed or very anxious people have given some thought about taking their lives. Demystify the subject by talking about it. Demystify it. You know, I've gone out to people before, and it's not just suicide. Other things I say, and I start talking. Somebody says, "Don't talk to them about that." I go, "Yeah, watch this. We're going to talk about it." And when I go to prison, sometimes I've seen some of the guys like Brandon said, he knows God's anointed me, or I'd be dead by now. But I go in there and I'll bring up some of the stuff, and they go, "Why are you bringing that up?" It's because I'm trying to demystify it. Go ahead, sister. Well, now, somebody, if it's an older person that says, "I'm ready to go home," well, I don't think they're suicidal. I just know they're ready. It's like this. I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to go home. And I remember Mama, when she was dying, Mama kept saying, "Don't worry about me. I'm ready. I'm ready to go home." And matter of fact, I don't know many of y'all in here, if I was to ask you where you're ready to go home, you know, that they were having an evangelism class. And evangelism class, they were saying, "I want you to ask somebody about heaven today, on Monday. I want you to ask about heaven." Well, this barber was in the evangelizing class, and he was sitting in his barber chair, and he was reading the paper. And while he's reading the paper, the man comes in and says, "I want to shave." And so starts lathering around, and he puts the towel over his head to warm him up. It hits him. I haven't evangelized anybody today. And so while he's sharpening up his blade, he sharpened his blade and he pulls the man's thing off and said, "Are you ready to go home?" Wrong time to ask him. but "Are you ready to go to heaven?" I hear a lot of people say, "I'm just ready to go home." And I just, sometimes they're just tired. They're just tired. You know, there's times where Wow. Hold on. Yeah, she's up through talking. She's through talking now. Here, check. Money order. All right.
No, about a month before my mother died, she just didn't want to eat. And I could not get her to eat. And she was just, she knew what was going on and everything. But she said, "He came to see me last night and said it was time to go home." And I didn't, I have regretted I did not go further into the conversation with her. But she never would eat. From that point on, she never would eat. And within a month, she died. I truly believe that she was told. She saw what she was seeing. I believe that.
That's a very powerful thing, and it's happened as a pastor and as a chaplain at Greenville Hospital and Washington Hospital. Of course, in Johnston County. If I could tell you how many times I heard that. Somebody came to see him, the Lord came and visited me, or I saw my mama, saw my daddy. Or saw somebody that I loved that's went on before me. And I think God uses them because they trust them, you know. And from that time on, they're at peace. They're ready to go. I mean, from then on out, you couldn't convince them any different. Now pass the microphone down to her.
And what would you call them?
I would think that it's just the Lord I would think that the Lord is just coming to them in the form of their mother and father and could be letting them come. I, you know, 'cause I'm not over on the other side to see it, but either the Lord is appearing as, because it's happened in my family, either the Lord is appearing to them or an angel is appearing to them in the form of their loved one, or it could be sending their loved one. But it sends them because, I'm going to tell you what, if I'm laying in the bed and I'm already scared what's going on, I happen to see this big old white being come in. You know, that's, but if I saw my mama come in and say, son, it's been a long time, I love you, and I'm coming to get, I mean, he's coming to get you, or you're going to come and join us, that would bring comfort to me. You know, seeing mama would bring comfort to me. If I see a great big angel, you know, I might not feel quite as comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Did that answer your question?
Wait a minute. Well, Pastor, in a time of very deep stress with me, and I guess we've all had stress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got it, and I'm right here.
There you go. Hold it to your mouth.
I have seen something like that. But, you know, you hear people talk about spirits, but that's a whole different thing.
Sometimes when you talk about spirits, sometimes when the Bible talks about spirits, it's actually talking about attitudes. And I've seen some people with some mighty bad attitudes, you know, and they don't realize that it's even a spiritual thing, you know. And then sometimes it talks about spirits. Satan is sending something along, you know. So that's why it says try the spirits. And when he's talking about try the spirits, we always think it's some great old big old thing out there. Try the spirits, see if it's of God. Sometimes just try people's attitudes. I mean, because you can see, you can tell some people, they're talking about, I'm holy. And you're going, yeah, right. Yeah, you're saying that while you're chopping me? Yeah, sure. You know, and so try the spirits. Many times it's a spiritual thing, but spirits sometimes are interchangeable with attitude. And in Philippians chapter 2, when it says, have the same spirit Christ had, it's the attitude of Christ, the servant attitude. So again, that's an attitude. And so you can tell somebody they have a sweet, you say they got such a sweet spirit about them, or they've got a loyal spirit about them, or they just have a servant spirit. Have you ever said that or heard that? You know, again, that's trying the spirit. You're watching, you can see, and somebody can sit there all day long and you can watch them as they're frowning. And, you know, some people say they're happy and they just haven't. If some people say they're happy, they need to notify their mouth. Your whole face, yes, they can do this because I'm happy. I'm so happy. Yeah, right. Is that your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of the people who are saying, I want to go home, are normally people who've been in a lot of, even if they're young, they're in pain. A
lot of pain.
They're paralyzed.
They're tired.
They can't eat.
Put it to your mouth. Put it to your mouth.
Is that better?
That's so everybody can hear you.
Yeah. Even younger people, they're tired. They're in a lot of pain. And they don't think they have anything to live. They're ready to go home. But they're not talking about taking their own life. So
no, they're just saying they're ready.
They're just ready.
Ready for it. Lord, I'm ready for you. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. That's right. All right. Here we go. That's... Here's your questions. Here's what I want you to watch now. You got it on your, I think you, yeah, you got it here on your paper. Ask questions such as, what do you think about suicide? Ask somebody that. If they're really depressed, they're really down, ask them, what do you think about suicide? You say, well, I don't want to bring it up. It's already in their mind. It's like, well, I don't want to bring up their past. I mean, I don't want to bring up a hurt. They're living with it every day. So, look. What do you think about suicide? I've asked many a person this. After I got training, I found instead of walking around being on pins and needles and like I'm on broken glass and scared to say anything, I learned that if I do this, it stands a better chance of preventing a suicide, a stronger chance. You will have a much better chance. I will say 50 to 75% chance of coming out on top of this thing if you will use these questions. Next question. Do your friends talk about it? Yeah, ask somebody if they're talking about suicide. Because sometimes they're talking about it because their friends talk about it. Remember the copycat we talked about last week? All right. Do you know anyone who has died of suicide? Ask them. You know, it's amazing if somebody's talking about it and you ask them, you find out that they know somebody, you know, that has done that. And then here's one I ask all the time. Would you ever take your own life? That's right. Well, you know, that there's actually, well, I'll go down below it because I still got it up here. I got to bring it up. Here you go. For a person considering suicide, having someone to talk with can be a powerful preventive. The Bible says the wise in heart are called discerning, and pleasant words promote instruction. Proverbs 16:21. Here's my number one question I always ask. I ask all these questions. I ask all four of them. But here's what I always leave them with. Here it is. Get ready. If you ever consider suicide, would you promise to call me first? And if I make them promise me, I mean, they'll sit there and go, well, you know, and I said, no. If we don't talk now, we're going to the doctor. I'm going to go to the magistrate. We're going to go somewhere if you don't talk to me. And they go, are you that serious? I said, I'm that serious. I mean, I've even pulled out the phone before and hit 9-1. I said, I'm going to hit it. And they go, ho. And I go, well, I said, you might not be serious, but I am. And you're talking about a serious subject. And so we're going to talk. Here's what I ask them. If you ever consider suicide, would you promise to call me first? And I have had the serious ones call me. And it stopped a suicide. This is a question I learned years ago. That it's not a solve-all question. It doesn't prevent all, but that is one of the most powerful questions because a person feels honor within them if they've made a promise to you to keep that promise. So that really is a very powerful one. Yes, ma'am. Well, that goes back to, are they serious about killing themselves or are they using it as a manipulation to get somebody to stay with them? I'm scared they might kill themselves. I'd have to know the person more. Just off top of my head. Of course, if anybody tells you it's just off the top of the head, it's Beck Dandruff, all right? But just off the top of my head, I would say if I heard that, I would think that was a cry for attention. Now, after I got to know him better, I may tell you, hey, and I'm going to tell you over this course that we're going to do, I'm going to tell you what to look for, the signs of true suicide. And if you see these signs, do not play. Do something. If I show you these signs, do not play. Do something. All right? So here we go. People who talk about killing themselves never do. And we're talking about it right now. But here's a fable. People who talk about it never do it. Guess what? Of those who took their own lives, approximately 75% gave clues or warnings to family or friends. Take any threat of suicide seriously. Someone who talks about suicide gives the others opportunity to intervene. If you want to get somebody that's like saying, if I keep standing by myself, I'm going to kill myself, say, well, do that thing, or would you call me first? And you can say, look, if you keep talking about this, we're going to the doctor, or I'm going to call the magistrate. What I'm just saying is we're going to do it. We're just going to do it. You know, we're going to do it. And you know what? They start doing it. Well, that again, that lets me know that it's manipulation or just wanting attention. Right. That's right. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Ephesians 4:2. Number three fable. And I've heard this one, I don't know if y'all have or not, more suicides occur during the winter holidays. How many's heard that? During Christmas time and all that? That's the greatest time of suicides? No, watch this. This is a long-standing myth. However, suicides are actually lowest in December. If you look at statistics, they are lowest in December. Suicide rates are below average in winter and above average in the spring. Peaking in April. That's it may be because after the stock market crash, those guys jumped out the window. They lost all their stuff and they jumped out the window. Yeah, a lot of them. That's right. That's right. Okay, watch this. For youth, The suicide rates are higher in the summer. I would think that has to do with they can't do what they want to do, or they get their feelings hurt because of people, you know, they want to hang around with, they can't hang around with them, you know, they hurt their feelings. And then for the middle-aged, as all of us are middle-aged, right? Fair to middle-aged, fair to middling age. Look, for middle-aged adults, age 36 and up, suicide rates rise again in the fall. In general, suicide risks decrease as social interactions. See, watch. Suicide risks decrease as social interactions increase. In other words, the more you talk to them about it, the least chance they're going to have of doing it. Don't be afraid to talk to somebody about it. It's okay. Becoming aware of the most frequent occurrences of suicide will help you discern when a struggler is at risk. The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge. The ears of the wise seek it out. Proverbs 18:15. We only got two more, and then we're going to close. Number four, talking about the method of someone's suicide with all the gory details and the emotional impact on loved lives will help prevent others from committing suicide. Wrong. Watch. Presenting precise details of a suicide. How many have watched Fox lately when the guys shoot up the theaters and stuff and they go, we're not giving their 15 minutes of fame. We're not even going to talk about their name. Or they'll say, a guy did this and we're not even going to talk about it. Because every time you start talking about stuff, the copycats come in. So watch, if somebody's committed suicide, you can do the details with your close family. I'm not talking about that. That you go ahead. You can share the details with your family. You share them with your friends. But I'm talking about if you're getting around talking about it, don't go into the whole whatever, because including the heartbreaking reaction of the family can spark an explosion of copycat suicides. Most people in the media and school officials have learned that suicides can be contagious. Therefore, they curtail details of what happened and instead focus on why it happened as a preventative. So when you got this going on, again, it's why did this happen, not what happened. Suicide contagion refers to suicidal behavior on the part of vulnerable people who can easily be influenced to commit suicide because of a previous attempt or another's death. The Bible also gives us warning about the misuse of our words. It says there's a time to be silent and a time to speak. Right. But that's if they can be quiet. I know, but if they can just be quiet about it, then the other person will get their 15 minutes of fame. All right, here's the last one for tonight. Again, I hate to leave on this one, but it's still okay to leave on this one because the next five are going to explain more. This, though, has to be handled with kid gloves. Everyone who commits suicide is mentally ill. Now, you got to think about what I'm talking about here. We're talking about somebody that is, I'm not talking about somebody that's like, in Texas, if you walk in and find your spouse in the bed with another person and you shoot them, it's a crime of passion. And you'll walk away. Not in North Carolina, but in Texas. Okay? Because they know when you go in and happen to see that spouse interacting with another person like that, you just flip out. And it goes. Oh, there's some people get away with it, but it seems like it. Yeah, but what I'm saying is though, the point I was trying to make is there's that moment in time when everything's blank, when you're not thinking. So we're not talking about that necessarily. We're talking about somebody that's mentally ill, as in these people need to be hospitalized. So watch this. Not everyone. Of those who kill themselves, approximately 90% are afflicted with 90% are afflicted with diagnosable psychotic disorder. However, look at the life of Elijah. Elijah was a mighty man of God. I mean, he just prayed. He killed 850 prophets. You say, well, there's 400. Well, you read it. It says there was the prophets of Baal plus the prophets of the grove. He killed 850 prophets. He's tired. He's exhausted. And what's amazing is one woman scares him. 850 prophets and the whole nation couldn't get him. But one woman said, "You're going to be just like my prophets tomorrow." And he runs off. He's hungry. He's tired. His faith has been drained. He's built the altar of God. He's done all this stuff. Fire came down from heaven. And so all this good stuff's going on. He's terrified and wanted to die. And he says, "So Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. He prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, take my life." Okay, now, that 10%, the 10%, I would think, of all the people that I know over the years, I'm not talking about the ones that were in the hospital and in the mental wards and stuff. I'm talking about the friends and the other people, they were in that 10%. They just came to a point where enough is enough. And when they got that enough is enough, they didn't see another way out at the time. And I call it a mental blank. You just blank out. Because you're not designed for this. You're designed to seek life. And so when that happens, again, if somebody could intervene, they could stop it. Now, somebody's so mentally off that that's all they think about. I'm talking about somebody that's really mentally sick. You may, all these questions, anything you got, you know, that's when the doctors are giving them medicine and trying to, you know, giving them a silver and all kinds of stuff, trying to get their head back together. But that 10% could be saved if we could ask them those questions. And Wow. Oh, yeah. Right, and that's gonna be the signs that I'm gonna give you. When you see these signs, that's somebody's planning it. Well, we all figured that one out when we met you. Untreated, yeah. But you know what? Now I got called in to a family that didn't have a pastor, and they said that the initial observation by the medical examiner was suicide, and they said it couldn't have been. And they went on and on how it couldn't have been suicide. And they asked me, "Pastor, what you think?" And so I gave them the signs of somebody contemplating suicide. Not somebody just on the spur of the moment, somebody's contemplating it. And when I gave them like five or six signs, and every last one of them fit him to a T. And they said, "You know what? We're going to have to accept it." He did. One of the things you got to watch for, here's one of the things, and I don't want to get into it till we get there, but if you find somebody that starts taking their prized possessions and giving them away, watch out. Because you want to make sure that it goes to the right people. So watch it. If somebody starts just giving all their stuff away, and they start giving. I want you to have this, and I want you to have this, and I want you to have this. Start watching, because that's one of the big, biggie signs, okay? Yes, ma'am.
Some of the
10%. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like Wayne was talking about. They just all they see. That's all they see. That's all that's in their mind is I've got this problem. They're nearsighted, and their faith is blocked by their problem. And many times, if somebody could rescue them, there wouldn't be, you know, that they would be fine. Because I have over the years had a chance to step in, you know. Now I think I told y'all this earlier, and I won't get into the whole story, but there was a man. Oh, here's what I'm going to ask you. Two things you need to ask. Here's what I was going to leave you with. Two questions I want you to ask anybody that you're suspecting is contemplating suicide. Number one, I want you to ask them up front, no holds barred, no beating around the bush. Are you seriously considering suicide now? And if they say why, you tell them because suicide is a crime. And I'm responsible, all of us are responsible to report it. Don't walk off and say, well, if he does it, fine. If he don't, fine. I'll wake up in the morning, I'll look at the newspaper and see if he's there. No. You say, here's what you tell him. It's a crime. I'm going to report it. I'm going to call 911, and we're going to report it right now. And what usually happens is if they're really not serious, they're going to have you, no. I've done it not just a suicide. I've done it with somebody grabbing a gun, saying they were going to take somebody else out, all kinds of stuff like that. And I'll say, well, if you're really serious, I'm calling right now. And they go, no. You can't call anybody. And I said, watch me. You know, because I said, you can't hurt people. It's not going to work. And suicide, you hurt yourself. So that's in the first question. And then the second question is, if they say, no, I thought about it, but no. Here's your question. The one I told you to ask. If you get feeling so bad that you think suicide is the only way out, will you please call me before you do anything? And honestly, you say, that's not going to work. You'd be surprised. I've had people call me. I even had a person call me about 2 months ago. They called me, and they said, you told me if I ever felt this way to give you a call. They said, here's my call. Now, people will call you. And what you do is, you get them. You take them to the hospital. If you take them to the hospital, they'll run. They'll take them in the emergency room and they'll process them and they'll take them up to the fourth floor. And if you just say I think they are, they might keep them for 3 days. But if they try, they're going to stay. They're going to stay for a while. And so again, don't be afraid, because you could save a life. And again, I want to save a life. Amen. I want to save a life. All right. Anybody got any more questions or anything?
Last week, you were talking about assisted suicide. Is that something that people can take?
Say, like your dog, you can add to it. That's assisted
suicide. So that's what it is.
Yes. But that, for a dog, that's mercy. For a dog, that's mercy. My dog, I had a dog that was so sick it had leukemia. And I came here on a Tuesday night. The dog was so sick. I was working on my message, and the dog was so sick that I had to pick my dog up and put it in a chair. Buttons. It was the it was the Cocker Spaniel mixed with Lhasa Apso. And it only weighed 20 pounds. I picked that dog up, been with me for years, helped me through my mama's death, helped me through my wife's death. It was just my dog. I mean, it was just a special dog. And I put her up beside me, and she just laid up against me. And I said, Lord, they've told me to put her down, but I can't. I said, Lord, can you do me a favor, honestly, Lord, and just let her go out of here. Just let her sleep and go out of here. Well, I came to church that night. It was Tuesday night. I came to church. I left, and I kissed her. And I said, I love you, girl. Thanks for always being there. And I kissed her. And when I came back after service, Linda grabbed her and said, honey, come here. She was still warm, but she had died during service. And so I took her and wrapped her under my shirt, and I buried her at Beverly's feet. Linda held the flashlight, and Bethany come out there, and I dug her grave out there at the foot of Beverly's grave and put her down there and said, you were loyal. You were so loyal. You know, I just hope nobody think we were grave robbers out there. Now I tell you what, Art Bailey had a funny story. What was his name? It was the painter, Jontley. In Oriental, that guy's name was Jontley something. He was a painter. He never got married. He stayed and took care of his mama. And he had a parrot that was 90 years old. And she had a dog. Well, she died. And then the parrot died, and then Jontley's dog died. And Jontley came up to Art and said, Art, I need you to help me. And Brantley was not doing too well at the time. He had taken some help. Okay. And so Jontley, you're in no condition to drive, and you're in no condition to bury this dog. He said, I got to go bury my dog. She said, where are you going to bury him? He said, I'm going to bury him on top of Mama's grave. And this was in you can turn that camera off. And he said, I want to bury him on top of Mama's grave. And he says, you can't. We'll be out there in the middle of the night in Oriental in a public graveyard. You can't bury this dog on top of your mama. He said, yes, I can. He says, well, where'd you bury the parrot? He said, on top of Mama's grave. And so they went out there and dug a hole on top of Mama's grave and put the dog in. And while Jontley was burying it, Art just kept looking around for the log. If you hear him tell it, it is the funniest story. Well, Lee Harvey Oswald's head was taken off and replaced. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of little mysteries about that. The wrong heads, yeah, it's because they were trying to, yeah, they were trying to hide something. That's putting in God's hands. That's putting in God's hands. Because my mama did the same thing. And that's putting in God's hands. You're saying, okay, God, if you want me to stay, I'll stay. And when they took, Sister Nora, they took her off and of life support, and she lived how many years? Yeah, because they called her and said, I mean, they're saying this is going to be the end. And next thing they're saying, well, can you please move her? We need the room. I mean, she come on back strong. I mean, she bounced back like a ball. And also, there's another lady. She lived at Mallard Creek. They said her body was shutting down, and her daughter sat there, and they all were trying to work on getting a funeral. We were already picking the pallbearers, and the doctor said she wouldn't make it through the day. And I remember going back there, I looked at her, and she was still talking, although everything was shutting down. And I said, "Sister," she kept trying to tell me something. She couldn't talk. She's on a ventilator. She kept trying to talk to me. I'll think of her name in a minute, but her name was Ireland. Her last name was Ireland. Mickey Ireland. And they said she was going out of here. She wouldn't make it through the day. I remember going talking to her, and I said, "You don't like what they're saying, do you?" And she said, "Mm-mm." And I said, "You're not ready to go, are you?" And she went, "Uh-uh." And I, it was just boldness of the Lord. I said, "Well, don't." And that's all I said was don't. And we walked back out, and we had sat there for like 5 hours waiting for it because everything was shutting down. And finally, the doctor came by. I said, "Well, what's going on, Doc?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Are y'all pulling the plug today or what?" He said, "Why?" He said, "Everything woke back up." She lived, I think, 5 years. Sister Nora lived 2 or 3 years, and Mickey lived 5 years. Now, my wife, though, they took her off the ventilator, and she lasted 14 minutes. But again, we're putting it in God's hands. You know, and Bearman had already discussed it. If I'm in that condition, put me in God's hands. If God wants me with him, I'll be with him. That's not an assisted suicide. That's taking them off that ventilator and putting them in God's hands. And many people have actually lived and got up and walked away from when they said they weren't going to be able to make it at all. And my mama, she went off dialysis, and they said she'd only live a couple of weeks. She lived 2 months. And again, I didn't like it, but I don't consider that suicide. I consider that putting it in God's hands. You know, wow. Again, I think that's, you know, just the Lord answering, because what I have a hard time with is when somebody, because as a chaplain and as a pastor, I have talked hundreds of people through to death, and they'll say, "Just tell them to let go. Tell them it's okay. You know, just tell them it's all right. Pray with them. Let them calm them down so they can just relax." And I remember Hollowell, Sister Hollowell, she was like 97, something like that. And I remember they said, and I remember talking with her. And I remember praying with her. And I said, "Sister, can't you sense the spirit in this room? Can't you sense the angels?" Because you could feel it. And we prayed. And I walked out. And was walking the elevator, and I didn't hear it. May was trying to get my attention. By the time I got in the elevator, she had died. You know, because she just needed somebody to tell her it's okay. You know, my mama, the same way. Beverly, my wife, the same way. Is you know, you have to, sometimes you just have to tell them. But there's been times where I hated to do that because I knew the one last time that I talked with them, they said, "I do not want to die." So I felt bad. The first time I had to do that, I felt so bad because I said, "Wait a minute, last thing they told me was they didn't want to die. Now you're telling me, tell them to let go." You know what I'm saying? And I did. Yeah, but I did tell them to let go and they died. You know, so there's a lot. We're Christians. And to us, death is a doorway. And if it's a doorway, we got something so much better waiting on the other side. And the older I get, the more I realize how much better stuff's waiting on the other side. Man, that new body without gray hair and without arthritis and well, there was some, you know where you get the word graveyard shift from? As it was actually, and setting up with the dead, there was people, because so many people were being buried alive. They would make sure they're dead. And so sometimes they would go in a room and they put them in a room and lay them. This is kind of gross, but they lay them in a room until they started decaying, and then they would bury them. to make sure they were dead. And then there was actually little tubes pushed down to the grave with a bell on it. I mean, a bell with a line on it with a bell, and people would set up and wait to hear the graveyard shift to see if they heard that bell, because somebody, they've gone and dug up graves and seen people's fingernails where they were trying to get out of the coffin. Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah. And so nowadays, though, when they bury, you're gone. I mean, once the funeral home embalms you, yeah, once they do that, there's no chance. It's over. I used to pastor an undertaker. That this undertaker said, the undertaker said that there was three sisters. They had never been married. They always lived together. They were like 95, 93, and 90. And it said that the 95-year-old died, and she was back there on the table, and they hadn't done anything to her yet. And the 93-year-old sister and the 90-year-old sister come by and said, "We want to see our sister." And he said, "You don't need to see her. We just got her laying on the slab. We haven't done anything yet." And one had a walker and one had a cane. And they said, "We want to see our sister. We're not leaving until we see our sister." So he said, "Okay, I don't think this is good, but come on back there." And this is a true story. And so they went on back there and they started crying over her. And they started jostling the body, and she had gas in her. And when they jostled her, she sat up and went, "Whoa." True story, and it said that the sisters ran. They said the sisters ran, 91 and 93 ran. And they said, "Sisters, come, what about your cane and your walker?" And they said, "Keep them." And they didn't even show up to the funeral. Yeah.